All right, so there's news stories that you have that you want to talk about because they're absolutely outlandish. Because they are. I mean, you know, outlandish news stories are outlandish. And they are religious news stories. And this is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey. And but we're not going to pretend that most religious people also agree with these points. That's not one of the things I like to do. Anyway, like I said, this is Ask an Atheist with me, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's toll-free nationwide. That is our voicemail number. Joining me today is Dan. How you doing, Dan?
Having a lovely day, Sam.
Fantastic. And as usual, the lovely Becky. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be back. It's nice to be here with Dan.
So our first news story, Becky, this is one you may want to sound off on because I think you have a little bit more experience with this than I do. The leaders of a Hasidic school in London have announced that students driven to school by their mothers will be turned away. Rabbis from the ultra-Orthodox Bells sect have written a letter to parents of students saying that traditional rules of modesty prohibit women from driving. The letter states that mothers who have to drive their kids because of an emergency situation should submit a request to a special committee and await their response before driving. The ban will go into effect this summer. Now, I'm not suggesting that you've actually lived through this, but I think you know the background on this much better than I do.
I do. I grew up in a pluralistic Jewish household, but, you know, somewhat observant within sort of the reform and conservative movements. I can say that pretty much the ultra-Orthodox sect of this nature, also referred to as Haredim, is pretty reviled for their practices in the more progressive and liberal
sects
of Judaism.
These are the people who come up with the shake and bake airline rabbi.
So there's these ridiculous things about women being temptresses. And so, Sam, what you're referring to is the gentleman who had a photo snapped of him and it made the Twitter rounds where he said, you know, rather than possibly risk coming into contact with a female, he was going to wrap himself in plastic.
Okay, shake and bake.
Oh,
yeah.
Now I get it.
Okay, you know what shake and bake is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right, fine.
I helped.
Yes. Okay, good. No, but, and you know, on the other hand, I like the guy who just sits in a garbage bag on an airplane. I mean, I don't know what to think about what he smells like when he pops that Jiffy Pop, but that's a lot better than bringing down the plane or refusing to board or refusing to let the airplane do its job because of your religious beliefs. I'll take shake and bake rabbi over anything else in this one.
Another one that I really like is lest you be tempted by a woman, wear glasses that obscures your vision.
Oh, yeah.
We covered that about 2 years ago. And those are all things that are not respectful of women and of men's ability to control themselves around women. But at least it doesn't outwardly and directly oppress women and children. This business of saying, hey, you want to send your child to a school, it's an ultra-Orthodox religious school where your secular studies are basically nil. Yeah. Maybe you'll do mathematics up through about the fourth grade level, but after that, you're studying Talmud and Torah, and you may not even be, studying English, any of those kinds of things. And if you are being driven to school by your mother, we are going to denigrate you and your family, restrict you from having an education, and then shame you for doing it.
Well, my favorite part of this is, my husband has had a heart attack today or yesterday and is dying. So I want to take my small child to school so they have some normalcy in their lives. I have to submit to a thing for a pass and wait for them to get back to me.
Right. Specifically, the language here almost negates what they're saying, that if you have to take your kids to school because of an emergency situation, you should submit a request to the special committee and await their response. That doesn't say emergency to me.
No, you should submit a request to the special committee and wait for a denial. That's what that says.
It's like calling 911 and they're like, well, did you file your 309A form?
Right.
We need you to file that 309A form and wait 4 to 6 weeks for processing before we can send an ambulance to your house.
At least in that situation, it wouldn't be doing it just because you're a woman. In this case, it is. And to me, this isn't really any different from, you know, women sort of trying to buck the trend in Saudi Arabia and doing driving protests. It's the same thing. And to suggest that a woman doing an action that is generally in your society relegated only to men is somehow immodest. I mean, it's a breakdown of a very, very restrictive gender roles.
Yeah.
And any kind of thing like that, it's going to lead to, you know, further suppression of women and children.
So this is a universally reviled group, but they're not a small group of people, right? I mean, they tend to have...
Well, the ultra-Orthodox sects, there are different ones. And this one is Belz, B-E-L-Z, and it comes from the region in Europe and Russia where it started. and any of the different ultra-Orthodox sects that have that name. It comes from their origin, sort of their community. But not all of them that are ultra-Orthodox will restrict women from driving. Some people will just say, well, you're not marriageable if you do those things like drive.
So is this the same sect that's been causing flight delays and things by refusing to be seated next to women and having to have everyone on the plane rearrange themselves?
I'm not actually sure whether it is the Bell's ultra-Orthodox Haredim, but that kind of behavior is not uncommon amongst ultra-Orthodox Jews. And the prohibition here is lest you come into contact with a woman, because there are times of the month that it is permitted, biblically speaking and Talmudically speaking, to come into contact with women. Lest you do that, you must avoid contact with all women at all times.
So it's like the opposite of the Arizona abortion laws, where in Arizona, it's just assumed that all women are pregnant all the time. In this sect, it's assumed that all women are on their periods all the time.
Presumably, yes. Huh. And the other thing, so it's...
They should find a happy medium.
Yes.
It's, not caring, I believe, is the happy
egalitarian
medium.
Pluralism would be my happy medium in that case.
But it gets weirder. Boy, howdy. A Muslim televangelist in Turkey declared that men who masturbate would find their hands pregnant in the afterlife. Mujahid Jihad Khan, self-styled televangelist, was responding to a question from a viewer who said he couldn't stop masturbating even though he was married. Han called masturbation haram, or forbidden, and claimed that the idea that men would go to the afterlife with pregnant hands came from one of the hadiths. So, this may be one of those, it may be one of those situations where somebody saying somebody had a fatwa or whatever just to make the other guy look bad. However, Becky, you saw this. This was on a Turkish news story, Turkish website with video.
So, Hurriyet Daily News is the English language Turkish newspaper. And from everything that I can deduce, this was a legitimate thing. He also has 12,000 Twitter followers who then came back at him with ridiculous statements, basically saying, what are there, what is going to happen? Are there hand gynecologists in the afterlife? How could you come
gynecologists?
How could you come up with such a ridiculous kind of thing?
All right. And so, but there's video. It is in Turkish. We don't speak Turkish, but we're going to go with it for now. So pregnant hands in the afterlife.
Pregnant hands in the afterlife. So. Given the content of the last story, my real question here is, will the inability of certain sects to touch pregnant women stop Jews and Muslims from shaking hands and putting the conflict away?
This is the worst game of tag ever. Oh, jeez.
I do not know. I do not know. But in any case, this is, I mean, when you have that kind of thing, I actually tried to track down what hadith this references. And I've got one reference that just gets the same wall of text repeated and repeated and copied and posted all across any references to it whatsoever. So you can say, this came from one of the hadiths, so it must be something that's, within our tradition. But the problem is that not all of the hadiths are well accepted into one's community, into the Sharia practices of things. We say Sharia law as if it's dictating
so
specific
things. The bulbous hand might be the chariots of iron of Islam, then? Is that what we're saying?
Perhaps.
Yeah, just the thing that people seem to forget about.
I'm just imagining the weirdness of, shaking their hand and having the baby kick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, babies have certain mass, and assuming there's conservation of mass in or whatever, assuming physics, mm-hmm. you got weird looking hands if you're in the afterlife. Also,
true.
Worst X-Man ever. I can shoot babies from my hands.
I was picturing that this is the hands will become pregnant with a baby hand.
I mean, it might be good in a famine.
Oh. It's not going to be a full baby. It's just going to become pregnant with a hand.
Oh, man, that would be so cool, because right as it's coming out, you could do that scene from Alien.
Yes. And hands.
Oh, man, imagine the ventriloquist act.
And
you're up there by yourself, and 10 minutes later, you got 10 babies all tall telling jokes. It's
only 10?
Well, you know.
Yes.
I imagine your hands might get tired.
I imagine they might.
And get hairy.
But hands don't have very much meat on it, so, it wouldn't be you know.
Well, we've
very
got some
for the snacking.
We've got some folks to thank. We have Rich from Actual Kent in the UK and John from Puyallup, Washington for meeting Peggy's challenge. Peggy's challenge is the challenge to listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping the show going. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, and click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, and it'll take you right to our PayPal page. What would you call an X-Man who shoots babies?
Out of their hands?
Yeah.
Why? I'm
obstetrician?
Not even sure. The obstetrician.
I don't know. Any ideas, Becky?
I'm not sure exactly. I think the hand ecologist was good.
Hand ecologist.
It sounds
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Oh, I said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a villain. He could be like the fist of contraction or something.
He could. This does remind me, actually, back to the story about why Jewish men, why ultra-Orthodox Jewish men do not want to come into contact with women. In one of the Talmudic writings, again, sort of like this apocryphal discussion thing, it was rumored that a menstruating woman could cause bees to descend upon a man.
No, that's a good X-Man power.
Yes,
that's
I think
great.
So.
Yeah.
But apparently only for 5 to 7 days per month.
Apiary. Hey, do you remember those movies in the 80s of the killer bees like attacking a city and killing everybody?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Where they made the bees look like gas warfare, like the cloud of bees would come in and then everybody would start dying because they'd all go in.
It was all the fault of menstruating women.
Yeah.
Huh.
So here's the thing. We have those little things that we can cherry pick in religious life. Not everyone agrees to them, but there are some wacky, wacky things out there.
Yeah, but if you are religious, remember, these guys agree with you, not us. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to a break. When we come back, gonna do some voicemail.
Billy! Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Join Seattle Atheists at the Hall at Fauntleroy on June 4th for an evening with Seth Andrews, host and producer of the award-winning Thinking Atheist podcast. A former Christian and religious broadcaster, Seth's everyman approach brings millions into the conversation about religious beliefs. Doors for this event open at 6 p.m. for a cash bar reception, followed by a talk at 7:15. Seth will stick around afterwards for a signing of his new book, Sacred Cows. Tickets can be purchased at the door and at brownpapertickets.com. Brought to you by Seattle Atheists. We believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Welcome back. back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's toll-free nationwide. And that phone number, when we are live, and we haven't been live lately, that is our live phone calling number, but it is also our voicemail number, so you can call it at any time and leave us fun messages, much like this one.
Hi, my name is Randy, and I was listening to your show, and I have had a question, because I've been talking with a friend of mine who's actually a Christian, and he has more or less made a case against me that there is no way, no real way to argue against killing people from an atheist point of view. I mean, I'm having a hard time providing a foundation which says this is why we should do humanism, this is where it came from, with lack of ultimate truth due to postmodernism and such. I cannot understand, I mean, I cannot prove to him that there's a reason why we can be humanist and atheist at the same time. I mean, I don't know if that's a common question or anything, but I really appreciate hearing an answer. Thank you very much.
So first and foremost, right out of the gate, before I turn to you guys, over to you guys for an answer, lack of ultimate truth due to postmodernism and such, that's adopting the language of the other side and basically calling them the victor out of the gate. So don't be very careful when you say stuff like that. Humanism is not, by any stretch, a postmodern concept. Humanism has been with us, even secular humanism has been with us for, what, 2,000 years or something like that? It's been around at least that long.
Had several resurgences. Enlightenment, you had, you know.
It goes in waves, but humanism is by no means a postmodern concept. Now, this is a question that we get a lot, and I know, I think everybody at this table has received it one time or another. Dan, how do you usually answer this one?
So, I think that there is an evolutionary argument for altruistic behaviors, and this is a pretty common response, that it is advantageous for a social, intelligent animal, like a human being, or like an elephant, or like an orca whale, to have certain behaviors within their communities that foster cooperation and trust among individuals. When you have a social animal, the more each individual is concerned with the success of the group, the more likely that individual is to pass on its genes, or that the group is to pass on its own genes. It's simply an argument of when it comes to facing a common predator or exploiting a prey source, it's better to work as a group, and groups work better when individuals cooperate.
There's a side argument in here when people talk about group selection, in that people who study evolution like to say that there is no group selection, and that's absolutely true. But sometimes when we talk like that, I tend to think of it in terms of there is no group selection in hardware. There is group selection in software.
Absolutely. Yeah. The what you can pass on is not just limited to your genetics.
Right.
Let's take one of our great and one of my favorite minds of history, despite his sort of late life crazy pants stuff. Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
He absolutely changed the world for all of us.
I kind of like him for those crazy pants stuff, too.
Yeah, we've got alternating current, which gave us all sorts of things, like radio, for instance.
And not dying.
And here's a man who never had sex in his entire life. Could we say that he didn't contribute to the species? No, of course not. He made a tremendous contribution.
Right.
Bigger than most people that come to mind immediately.
So how about you, Becky?
Well, Randy's question was kind of interesting when she says, from an atheist perspective, is there any reason to not kill people? And it's not so much that the lack of believing in a God will motivate you not to kill things or to kill people. It's more all of the things that when you put away a belief in God, what source do you have for not killing people? So, Dan, you talked about sort of that evolutionary programming that's within us and other cooperative mammals. But then in addition to that, we have other positive philosophies. So you have humanism that believes in the dignity of individuals, that every individual should have agency, that we should take care of the place that we live. And we do it for not any purpose other than for this life. We don't do it looking towards an afterlife reward. We don't do it looking to be rewarded magically and karmically in this life necessarily by some supernatural means. And so to say, is there an atheist point of view for why you shouldn't kill people? No, because atheism literally is just not believing in a god or gods.
Right.
But everything else that goes along with that, there's definitely reasons.
And
compassion, wanting to, better the human race, wanting to better where we live.
I would say, On the contrary, there is no atheist reason to not kill people. But on the other hand, in an atheist point of view, there's no theist reason to kill people.
Right.
I don't want to vilify all religions or paint them all with the same brush. I know they're special little Bifrost flakes out there, but lots of religions command you to kill people who are different, and whether or not those commands are actually followed is a whole other subject of study. But the fact is, those commands are in there. If you're an atheist, those commands don't pertain to you.
I'm not going to call it the null hypothesis, but in this case, a zero hypothesis, starting from nowhere.
Right.
That's a knife that cuts both ways. Yeah. They always ask us, why is it bad to kill people? Because that's an argument that puts you on the defensive.
Yeah.
Where now you've just flipped that around and made it offensive in debate concepts. It's not like we're going around beating people up. But that, from my perspective, I think the question is invalid. He's saying, well, you know, I've got these, and I know in debate this is cheating, but I'm going to cheat. So the question he's asking here is, I have this rule set that has been handed down to me, blah, 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 that commands me not to kill people. What do you have? You have the same thing this guy has, assuming it's a guy. A choice was made in that person's life, whether it was made by their parents or by them, to become a Christian and accept this rule set. They're pretending that they've always lived this way and it was handed down from high, and they have evidence. They don't have evidence. Otherwise, why would they need faith? They have decided to accept this mantle, to accept this rule set, to say that harming people is bad. So what actually separates you from that person? The other thing is, I don't know if there are any cultures out there who liked being murdered. If there were... we might have heard about... Well, we probably wouldn't have heard about him.
Not recently.
Probably wouldn't have stuck around very long. What if morality... What if the whole concept of morality is just an emergent phenomena from the fact that we're all biological creatures, we all enjoy life, and we all want happiness, and we all want liberty, and we all want one of those things, and morality is what happens when you have a population of those people who need... Or a population of those, you know, animals that act socially and need interaction for their own health. It seems like morality is a first order effect of that kind of behavior. So my point is, their morality and your morality are coming from the same place. It's just they have made this story up that says that somebody handed it to them down high. There's this concept in philosophy that everything must come from the universe itself. All of our rules must be natural or it's not important at all. And I think that's crap. I think maybe our morality, if our morality is based in our biology rather than in our physics, I don't see how that's any more or less fundamental than it being based in our physics. I just don't. We are biological creatures. We will continue to be biological creatures for some time. I would even go further to say that if we do become robots and computers in the future, we will still essentially be biological creatures.
Driven by those same impulses to survive and to thrive and to cooperate and all
right.
those kinds of things.
Because the creation always has the, you know, I'll take that thing from religion. Creation always has the image of the maker in it. But that's actually kind of true when you're building a thing. My point here is that you asked a question, what the atheist answer is. There isn't an atheist answer. But you have three atheists in a room. You have three answers. Take the one you like, or take parts of the ones you like, or mix and match, or come up with your own and tell us how much better it is than ours. I'd love that. I love that stuff.
Something you said, Sam, that this guy's morality comes from the same place as yours. The same message that says killing people is wrong comes from the Christian perspective and the humanist perspective. Dan, you said that this is something naturally evolving. And you also said, hey, it's in this person's rule set that there is a commandment to kill people, yet this Christian decides not to do that anyway. I would say that there's something that surpasses a belief in God in this person's case that leads them to believe that they are commanded not to kill people, even though their rule set and books say so.
For me personally, I think my perspective on it, not as a scientist and not necessarily as an atheist, but just as an individual, is that I suspect that I wouldn't like the taste of humans, and I try really hard to only kill things I plan to eat.
Oh, okay. I basically base it off of I don't want to die. I mean,
yeah,
it's a selfish outlook.
I don't really want to see anybody die, and I certainly don't want to be the cause of it.
That's definitely true. Last time I had this conversation personally was at that debate that was Bob Seidensticker versus...
This is Reverend Rand Wagner.
Oh, okay. His first name was Rand because he apparently grew up with Objectivists and then became a Christian. And one thing that I always really gets on my nerves, which is has nothing to do with this conversation, but it bothers me. It's my radio show, so I'm going to talk about it. Is the first thing out of this guy's mouth when we start talking about morality is, what's preventing me from, and then he gives you a significant look and goes, killing your wife. And why are you ramping up like this? It happened. Every time I talk to him.
Am I in danger now?
Yeah. And I'm like, I think at some point it went back and forth and people kept ramping up. It's like, hey, I think we need to step back and realize this is all, you know, we're getting mad here.
Right.
I was definitely getting mad. He's like, every third sentence out of his mouth was a pretend threat to my family or myself. I'm like, hey.
That's just arguing from emotion. That's not even making points anymore.
But that's when you're a preacher, that's what you do.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you hit him where it hurts, and it hurts in the emotions. It doesn't hurt in the logic.
Sure. I wonder if it's one of those things like they're trying to shake your concentration, get you mad so you make a mistake. Or maybe they're just getting mad and making the mistake of looking like a, you know, somebody who really wants to murder people.
Yeah, line A, column B. I think it's a little both.
Yeah, a little both.
Yeah. So here's another ponderable, which is a sort of a moral thing that I think there will be no atheist consensus on this one. So a trial in Fresno, California is looking into the question of whether or not defendant David Quevedo is guilty of murder when his victim refused a potentially life-saving blood transfusion. Quevedo is accused of murdering Omar Silva, a Jehovah's Witness. While both sides agree that Quevedo shot Silva, the defense argues that Quevedo is not guilty of murder because Silva refused a life-saving blood transfusion so as to not violate his religious beliefs. The prosecution is arguing that Silva would have died of his wounds with or without the transfusion. This person is being charged with murder because he shot somebody and because of their religious beliefs refused a blood transfusion and died. Is murder... legally, there's an argument to be made, and I'll make that in a minute, but where are you guys sitting here?
I guess my opinion on this one is it's sort of a blurry line, but the fact is that you shot them, you confessed to shooting them and giving them the injury that they would not have gotten otherwise, and that this injury ended their life.
Right.
Is it murder, I guess, is for a court to decide, I suppose, but it really is sort of a sticky issue. I mean, if they refused a blood transfusion that could have saved their life, what would the alternate crime there be then? You know, assault with a deadly weapon or...
Right.
To me, it looks like, okay, if you have someone who gravely injures someone who becomes incapacitated and needs to be on life support, oftentimes you will wait to have any charges filed because this person is likely going to die. And if a decision is made to remove life support from someone, say a child is incapacitated from a car accident, and parents decide to remove any kind of life support and any kind of heroic measures, then that child dies. That person can be now charged with vehicular homicide and not just, you know, vehicular assault. I don't see that this is, even though I may disagree with the person's decision to refuse a blood transfusion, I think that their reasons for believing that they cannot receive blood transfusions, they're based in something false. It leads to a lot of heartache. I don't agree with the Jehovah's Witness position on blood transfusion, but
right.
It was a decision that was made about their own life, and it resulted in their death, and they wouldn't have been faced with that decision had they not been assaulted. Just like the child who dies from a car accident. A decision was made to remove life support from that child, and they wouldn't have been in that position had someone not crashed into them.
And that's exactly it, is if somebody, I don't watch a lot of those cop shows, but I do watch the first 48 because I'm weird that way. But what I've noticed is that if you're involved in a robbery and your accomplice shoots somebody and kills somebody, you're still charged with murder.
Mm.
You didn't actually want to kill that person. You didn't decide to kill that person, but you decided to commit a crime that ended in a death. And then you get charged with murder. Generally, from what I understand, they generally plead down to manslaughter in that case, but they still plead down. This would be a much more interesting moral question if there was a guilty verdict already. Because charging them with murder might just be a tactical thing, which, I mean, okay, we can discuss the morality of that some other time. But I think in this case, because I think that's the central point, but because this person's religious belief in blood transfusion was a decision they had to make because of a crime that ended in their death, it's still murder.
I would agree. I think that many people might expect someone who disagrees with a Jehovah's Witness position on blood transfusions to say, well, he can't possibly be charged with murder because it was a silly thing to refuse a blood transfusion.
And I think it's totally consistent with the idea that if you kill your kid because of your religious beliefs, that's also murder.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's fully consistent.
I think you guys have changed my mind here. I don't think this issue is quite as fuzzy or sticky as it appeared at first.
I still think it's fuzzy.
It's still fuzzy, yeah. I'm more inclined to agree that, you know, that this is a...
And I very much want to hear, like, I thought we would actually have some disagreement, a little bit more disagreement than we did. And so, your turn. Go to askanatheist.tv, click on the red button, give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC, and let us know why we are horrible people who should be punished for our opinions on such things, I guess.
I think it is tragic that someone would refuse a blood transfusion for something that doesn't really make any kind of sense, that there isn't evidence for. But at the same time, we have heard from former Jehovah's Witnesses, we've heard from active Jehovah's Witnesses that would be exceedingly troubled by receiving blood products. And I don't want to say that, hey, you know what, you can save this person's life, and then you live a life of being exceedingly troubled that you have wronged what you think is the ultimate source of truth,
right,
and that you have damned yourself, essentially. I think that it's silly and tragic, but at the same time, I'm not going to mandate that an adult receive blood transfusions.
Yeah.
Just to avoid someone from being charged with murder.
Well, let's say the case was something a little bit different. Like, let's say the victim was a hemophiliac.
Right.
Or, you know, had a severe lead allergy or something like that. The shooter couldn't possibly know that going into it. But if either of those things turned out to be the cause of death rather than blood loss, or rather than the bullet wound itself, that they would have had a superficial wound, but because of their hemophilia bled out, or had some sort of allergy to the projectile and, you know, went into anaphylaxis and died, would we even be debating this?
That's a good question. I would say not.
I would say not. You don't get to pick as
right.
the person.
Well, I mean, we're debating this because of its religious of its religious
right,
dimension,
right,
and this
of
is
course,
an atheist
yeah.
show. But I think even then, I don't think we'd be discussing this.
I think the reason that people might find this debatable is because there was a decision made on behalf of the victim here to do something that could have presumably kept him alive. Someone who goes into anaphylaxis, they don't have a choice about whether they're allergic to something or not. If a person said, I have anaphylaxis and I'm refusing this EpiPen injection, maybe it would be a similar case. But a person doesn't have a choice about whether they're on blood thinners and bleed out, or whether they have an allergy. A person has presumably a choice about whether to accept blood products.
I suppose that depends also how you want to look at the choice. I mean, I'm familiar enough with the type of indoctrination that goes on with Jehovah's Witnesses to sort of file that under, and please forgive me, I'm going to get hate about this, but I would file it under a mental illness, that this is something that has been done to you unfairly.
Mental injury, surely.
Yes, mental injury. Thank you. That's a much better way of phrasing it. I apologize for saying illness.
No, go for it.
But I mean, like PTSD.
That changes the way you think fundamentally.
It changes the way that you think fundamentally. And I would definitely call that an injury or an illness or a physical condition as much as it could be a decision or mental condition, as just as real as an allergy or hemophilia might be.
I think there's a dimension
to that.
I think there is a dimension to that. And we tend to... This is one of those places where I think we tend to forget that, you know, a mental injury is actually still an injury if you can't see it, you know, and that's a big one as well. It was their choice, and that may be true. But when your choice is perverted because everyone around you is telling you you're going to be punished forever if you do this,
sure.
In this case, where is the actual choice? Where is that particular psyche being allowed to make that sort of decision? I think this is okay. You want something I actually struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are. I on questions like this, I don't, because now you have the other thing is you have the another effect of that is you have somebody who lives there and is responsible and has, you know, a victim of that, but then they turn around, you know, and do it to their kids, and then they do it to their kids, which is how these religions propagate. where is the line between, you know, treating somebody like a victim of an injury and treating somebody with the responsibility of causing an injury, even if they knowingly didn't do it? Where is the line between, you know, compassion and punishment?
It's difficult. And when you come from a perspective that adults have their own individual agency, but you can also recognize that that agency can be compromised by, you know, by cultural programming, by an upbringing, that's a very difficult thing. You know, we like to say that that minor children cannot, you know, make their own decisions. There's a little bit of leeway, you know, in for teens. But we basically as a society say, you're 18 plus, you make your own decisions, and we have little room.
I think there's also the short form of this, which is, well, if you want to avoid this question, don't kill people. Hard answers to hard questions. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, a moment of science.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And we have a moment of science via an email, and that email comes to us from Eric from Alaska, who writes, "When it comes to trusting Big Pharma and the drugs they develop and sell, it should be noted that it's not really in their best interest to investigate more natural treatment options. If they can't patent the product, then they can't make nearly as much money on it. This is one reason I think that the government should be more involved in developing treatments. Remember Jonas Salk? He refused to patent the polio vaccine and passed up the opportunity to make himself rich. Trust me, the pharmaceutical industry does not take that attitude, and they are not going to. And if you wanted an answer to this question or this email, boy, you're about to get one."
So today's moment of science is about natural medicines. An unfortunate aspect of our culture, as I addressed in the previous moment of science on chemophobia, is the division between what we think of as natural and everything else, whether it's Western medicine or the chemicals that make up your food. I hope I don't have to say that this is an obvious false dichotomy, that nature is made of chemicals and that Western medicine is practiced worldwide because it is effective. But that's not to say that the field of natural medicine is so much woo-woo hand-waving. In fact, nature has come up with some of our best drugs for treating minor to severe illnesses. Let's start with one we're all familiar with. Acetylsalicylic acid is the chemical name for aspirin. It's a useful pain reliever, reduces inflammation, and relieves fevers. It also inhibits platelets in the blood from forming clots, and it may even be able to prevent some forms of cancer. Aspirin is made by reacting acetic anhydride with salicylic acid in water. That may sound a bit scary, but acetic anhydride in water becomes acetic acid, and as I'm sure Sam knows, acetic acid is just the chemical name for vinegar. The other half of aspirin, salicylic acid, is a compound originally found in the barks of willow trees. The use of powdered willow bark or leaves as a pain reliever dates all the way back to Hippocrates of ancient Greece. Unfortunately, salicylic acid alone can burn the throat and cause stomach aches, but when combined with acetic anhydride and water, most of its unpleasant side effects go away. So here's a case of a nearly perfect natural medicine, essentially combining water, vinegar, and willow tree bark to make one of history's most useful drugs. Another incredible naturally occurring compound comes from the Penicillium genus of molds. You've probably already guessed which one I'm talking about. Yes, penicillin. These naturally occurring molds, some of which were already being used in making salami long before their medicinal properties were discovered, produce compounds that kill bacteria by destroying their ability to rebuild their cell walls. That's bad news for bacteria, but great news for anyone suffering from a bacterial infection. These compounds were first studied for their medicinal value by Alexander Fleming in 1928, and it turns out that in the microbial world, fungi and bacteria are locked in constant competition for resources, and it's a good thing, too. If penicillium molds had evolved without bacterial competition, we might never have discovered antibiotics or their potential to save human and animal lives from excruciating deaths. That's another tally for nature. But it isn't just plants and fungi that have given us these wonder drugs. Animals make them too. Exenatide is a medication useful for treating diabetes that was originally found as a hormone in the saliva of the Gila monster lizard, native to the Sonoran Desert of the American Southwest. Another compound in its venomous bite, helodermin, has been shown to slow the growth of lung cancers. The venom of a marine snail, Conus magus, contains hundreds of different peptides or short chains of amino acids, and one of them can block certain kinds of severe pain that other drugs simply can't. From this venom, the drug ziconotide was developed. Its advantages include being a more effective pain reliever than even morphine, and it's currently believed to be non-habit-forming. Its primary use is by cancer patients. The scorpion, Centroroides tecumanus, is being studied for the effect of its venom, too. Its sting also contains numerous different peptides, and some of them appear to specifically target certain kinds of cancer cells. This scorpion's venom may also yield drugs for treating Parkinson's and other neurological diseases. Of course, you might have noticed something these drugs have in common. They're all either attack or defense mechanisms in the organisms that they come from. Even salicylic acid from willow trees is poisonous to some of the wood-boring bugs that might otherwise kill the tree. The simple fact that these natural drugs occur as weapons in the wild brings me to a very important point. People often suggest that we only synthesize drugs to patent them and make money. Of course, pharmaceutical companies are businesses, and yes, they do want to make money, but that's not the only reason. Natural compounds in the wild are not very consistent in their dosage, so we synthesize them in order to control for that. If you're taking an aspirin, you know exactly how much of the drug you're getting, whereas willow leaves or bark will have varying amounts of salicylic acid from tree to tree, branch to branch, or even leaf to leaf. Penicillium molds only produce penicillin under specific conditions, and in other conditions may produce compounds that are poisonous to humans. So going around eating mold isn't the best strategy for a person with a serious infection. Likewise, the bite of a Gila monster can leave you in excruciating pain. The sting of a cone snail can straight up kill you in a matter of minutes. And do I even need to mention scorpions again here? Talk about rolling the dice. The fact is, we synthesize these drugs because their natural forms don't give us any control over dosage or potency, and natural delivery of these drugs can be extremely dangerous. It would be reckless and irresponsible, and probably a felony, to prescribe being attacked by scorpions, lizards, or snails to an already suffering patient.
Fantastic. If you have a science question that you would like answered here on Ask an Atheist, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the red button, and let us know, and then you will receive more answer than your brain can possibly understand. And I'll be honest with you, this was a difficult one for me, because that's when you start talking about the way corporations work in terms of medicine, that becomes difficult for me to answer, because I worked in, you know, companies. I've worked for big businesses before. Yeah, they want to help the community, but they help the community as a way to make money. And so, I mean, businesses are profit motivated. You can discuss the morality of that all you like, and I go either way on that one a lot of the time. But that they're there to make money, not to make you feel better, mostly. So, on the other hand, you've got the individual researchers themselves who are actually really interested in helping people, and even the business owners. I mean, it's a complex issue, right? And it makes it difficult for me to make a clear answer.
So an interesting thing about the pharmaceutical industry as opposed to other industries, most drugs that go through research, development, and testing fail. They never recoup the money from all of that work that's gone into it. And I'm not going to lie to anybody and say that pharmaceuticals aren't profitable, massively profitable. They make buckets and buckets of money. But the thing is, the pharmaceutical industry is like the ultimate in venture capital.
Right.
You have to have a tremendous amount of money to put down to develop a drug, to do all of that testing.
Yeah.
If there weren't tremendous profits involved, it wouldn't happen. And as far as the government getting involved, the NIH, the National Health Institute of Health, and the NSF, the National Science Foundation, provide tremendous amounts of money, not nearly as much as they provide to, say, the military,
right?
But tremendous amounts of money for these sorts of drug research programs that are going on.
I would say challenging that if there wasn't a lot of money to be made, it wouldn't happen. I would challenge that statement, but that's about the only statement I would challenge. I think there might be other models available, but your point, that's the point that I think is key here.
Sure.
The idea that natural drugs are free and they grow in the dirt and stuff like that, that's great, but there are problems with it.
Huge
huge problems with that, especially since other stuff grows in the dirt too, like the stuff that makes you take the medicine in the first place a lot of the time.
And the cone snail, the Conus magus that is providing this amazing painkiller, the way it has to be administered to be safe is it has to be injected into the cerebrospinal fluid.
Oh, so you got to get past the blood-brain barrier.
That's not something you can do in the wild.
Yeah.
It's something that a cone snail could do to you in the wild, but you wouldn't just get this one drug. You'd be getting a whole suite of drugs. I mean, the amazing thing about cone snails is they attack practically every cellular channel. They really kill their prey fast. Why? Because they're a snail, and they need it to hold still right now so they can eat it.
Right.
So in terms of looking for either defense mechanisms or attack mechanisms in these organisms,
mm-hmm.
I don't imagine that these things were discovered by getting bitten by a Gila monster or attacked by a cone snail, right? So is it the job of researchers to sort of look at what are the natural defenses or natural attack mechanisms that are out there in the world and then sort of select for compounds for research?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of what's been found has been peptides in animals from venomous or poisonous animals. And when we discover how a poison works, how one of these poisonous peptides attacks a cell, we learn something about not just that poison, but also that cell. And if we can isolate the compound that closes, say, a sodium voltage-gated channel, we can learn how to use that in other cell types. Sort of like the scorpion venom is selectively killing certain types of cancer cells. But it also affects nerve cells in an interesting way, that it closes dopamine reuptake channels. So a problem with Parkinson's disease is having not enough dopamine in the synapse between neurons. Well, when you use a poison, and I'm not going to lie, it's a poison, but when you use a poison to close the dopamine reuptake channels, that dopamine stays in the synapses. It doesn't get reuptaken by those channels. And this is something that holds a lot of potential for Parkinson's and other neurological diseases.
I'm going to take a page from Bill Hicks here, and I discovering that these animals, or you know, these animals, these plants, but specifically these animals, have these drugs available that you know we can research from them. It's like I'm in the forest, I get stung by a scorpion. I'm in intense pain, but hey, my allergies went away.
Right, exactly.
We can synthesize this. That moment of discovery is just mind-boggling to me.
There is literally something that is almost exactly that. There is a type of hookworm that human beings have lived with for thousands of years, if not millions of years, among our ancestors. Well, this hookworm, a severe infection can kill you, but most people who have it have a mild, unnoticeable infection where these hookworms just sort of live in their lungs and do their thing. But this hookworm actually produces an amazing antihistamine that is like an across-the-board antihistamine. Basically, you have these hookworms, it's going to be hard for any sort of allergy to come up. And for the hookworm, this is a weapon against your own immune system. It tells your immune system not to attack it by releasing these I believe they're hormones, into the bloodstream. But it disables that reactive part of the immune system so well that, hey, you don't have any allergies anymore. Well, you probably have worms, but, you know, what's worse, sometimes coughing a little bit at night or having runny eyes and face all the time and dying if you look sideways at a bumblebee?
Yeah, worms, or speaking of somebody who has had to carry an EpiPen now and again, worms or allergies, that is not an easy decision to make, but I'm on the side of the worms on that one, I think.
And the cool thing about...
Somebody give me some worms!
The cool thing about this, as far as natural medicine goes... the researcher who sort of discovered this property, I've forgotten his name. It can be easily found in internet search. Look up hookworms, allergy, and guy standing in poo. Because what he did was go to cesspits in undeveloped nations and stomp around barefoot in community cesspits, community waste receptacles, to deliberately infect himself with these worms.
I love that little get out clause in in research is you can't use human subjects unless it's you.
You can't use you either.
Really?
You really can't. I mean, but this is a thing about scientists. They're very motivated people,
okay,
and often will if there's no other way to get around it.
Right on.
It's unethical to do this sort of a trial in human beings. But if it's you, well, you may have some difficulty publishing your results, but at least you've got some preliminary information going.
But, you know, I make the joke about somebody get me a cup full of worms to down like a shot. A drug was actually synthesized because of this research, correct?
It is being synthesized.
It is being synthesized now.
So what's happening is they're isolating the compound that the worms secrete into the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can isolate that compound and then synthesize that compound as a medicine... You can be allergy-free and worm-free. You can get the best of both worlds. And that's really what synthesizing natural medicines is about.
Yeah, because there are downsides to worms.
Right. And, and you know, there's plenty of money in it for the people who can synthesize it and patent it.
Right.
And that's all great. But a great deal of that money is going to go back into other research for other medicines. It's sort of like, you know, you have to be able to afford a train if you want to build a railroad. You know?
Yeah.
So are these the same kinds of worms that are also correlated with the lower incidence of asthma? Is it asthma, eczema, allergies, that sort of inflammatory response?
They are, yeah.
So I imagine that, well, if you have hookworms that these inhabit the lungs, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what you said?
Yeah, they start out entering your body through the skin, usually the skin of the feet. Lots of different worms have very complicated life cycles. So these guys get in through the skin of the feet. They make their way into your digestive system, or you can also get them from eating stuff that's been contaminated with poo. They make their way into your digestive system. They go through a life stage there. They get into, I believe, their adult breeding stage, though I could be wrong about this. And then while you are asleep, they crawl up your esophagus and past your glottis and down into your lungs.
Lovely. So I imagine that although there's a lowered incidence of asthma, allergies, and eczema, presumably coughing a little bit might actually still exacerbate that asthma. So if you could get rid of the lung worms, right? Mm-hmm. Lung worms are different organism, right? Hookworms. If you get rid of these worms that are in your lungs, you could, but have that compound, you could actually relieve the asthma without those sort of lung effects.
Absolutely. And it's important to point out that...
Yeah, you don't want to trade one lung effect for another, I suppose.
And it's not a good idea to go around trying to give yourself worms because, again, a severe infection of these worms can kill you, just like a scorpion sting or a Gila monster bite, although apparently nobody's died from one of those since 1939.
And one of the things... Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, hospitalizations, but apparently nobody actually dying from the bite.
The other thing about drug research is the research itself is incredibly expensive, but making sure that the drug doesn't kill you and the process of going through that is also really expensive.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a point that needs to be made, which we didn't really cover.
And again, most drugs that are researched fail. I mean,
yeah,
it's less than 1 in 10 drugs that actually go through all of these trials that actually gets there.
That's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Dan Lombardo and Becky Friedman. I'd like to thank Dave Brulette for writing. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Good night, Squim, wherever you are. See you next week. I don't know. I just want to do something different.
Squim? Like
yeah.
The city?
Yeah. It's from a Frank Zappa thing.